Hello, I am Joshua P. Warren, and this is Joshua P. Warren Daily. I want to share with you a mysterious manuscript that is based upon ancient Egyptian doctrines. And this manuscript, early on, makes the claim that it will appear in one's life when the time is appropriate. So the fact that you are presumably about to hear about this for the first time means that you are now ready and it is appropriate for this information to appear in your life right now. In fact, just to be accurate and read this verbatim, it actually says, quote, "So that according to the teachings, the passage of this book to those ready for the instruction will attract the attention of such as are prepared to receive the teaching. And likewise, when the pupil is ready to receive the truth, then will this little book come to him or her. Such is the law, the hermetic principle of cause and effect, and its aspect of the law of attraction, will bring lips and ear together, pupil and book in company. So mote it be." Which, by the way, has a certain Freemasonic ring to it. We'll get into that in a bit. I've struggled with how to tell you about this odd manuscript, and so I think I'll just sort of tell you a bit about my journey, about how I discovered it. I was reading one of the books written by Joe Gallenberger, who does a lot of work on manifestation, and he mentioned, just in passing in one of his books, that there is this ancient Egyptian document called the Kybalion that talks about manifestation. And I said, huh? Because, you know, I've been studying manifestation stuff for a long time, and it's possible. It is possible that I was exposed to this at some point in the past, and it just didn't connect with me. But this time it did. And I started looking into this, and I realized, okay, this is something that is right in line with all of my thinking, and it's not very long, okay? It's only 58 pages, but it's a book called the Kybalion. Now, that is not to be confused with the Kabbalah. The Kabbalah is an esoteric method, a discipline, and a school of thought that originated in Judaism. A lot of people call it mystical Judaism. The Kybalion is something completely different. It's spelled K-Y-B-A-L-I-O-N. And here is what the Kybalion says about the name, the Kybalion. In the early days, there was a compilation of certain basic hermetic doctrines. And by the way, I'll get back to that and what that means. Passed on from teacher to student, which was known as the Kybalion. The exact significance and meaning of the term have been lost for several centuries. This teaching, however, is known to many to whom it has descended from mouth to ear on and on throughout the centuries. Its precepts have never truly been written down or printed so far as we know. It was merely a collection of maxims, axioms, and precepts, which were non-understandable to outsiders, but which were readily understood by students after the axioms, maxims, and precepts had been explained and exemplified by the Hermetic initiates to their neophytes. These teachings really constituted the basic principles of the art of Hermetic alchemy, which, contrary to the general belief, dealt in the mastery of mental forces rather than material elements, the transmutation of one kind of mental vibration into others, instead of the changing of one kind of metal into another. The legends of the Philosopher's Stone, which would turn base metal into gold, was an allegory relating to Hermetic philosophy, readily understood by all students of true Hermeticism, end quote. So let me go back to that point, which is going to pervade much of what we're going to go over here. You think of alchemy, taking a worthless metal like lead and turning it into gold. As they just stated here in the Kabbalion, that is merely an analogy, that it's to symbolize the transmutation of one form, one frequency of reality, like your thoughts, into another form, which is something material, which in other words is a manifestation. That's really what it's about. Turning lead into gold is one way of passing it down for the simple sake of storytelling, but we're talking about turning one vibration into another and taking your mental forces and using them to create something tangible. Now, let me just tell you a little bit more about this particular document. When I first, you know, read about this, I was under the impression that this was some kind of an actual ancient Egyptian document. And it turns out that there are bits and pieces of this that have been written down, but most of it has only been passed along through oral tradition until it was put together for the first time in print in this book called The Kabbalion in the year 1908. So this was first published 110 years ago, but it references over and over the various parts of the ancient Egyptian and Hermetic tradition doctrines. So that's why there's a little bit of confusion over the origin, and here's what makes it even more mysterious. We don't know exactly who put this all together. In fact, the opening says, "This is a study of the Hermetic philosophy of ancient Egypt and Greece by three initiates." To this day, nobody knows who the, quote, three initiates are who finally put this into writing, who transmuted this from bits here and there and oral tradition here and there into a final 58-page collection called the Kabbalion. But the opening of the book says, quote, "The lips of wisdom are closed, except to the ears of understanding," end quote. And then it also says, "The Yogi Publication Society, Masonic Temple, Chicago, Illinois." So obviously Freemasonry was involved in this. And as you may or may not know, I am a Freemason. I am a Master Mason with membership in two Blue Lodges. And I'm also a 32nd degree in the Scottish Rite. And then I am a Knights Templar in the York Rite, fully dues-paying member in all of those. So whenever I see references to Masonry, I am always very interested to see if it rings true. And this does ring true to me, the information that is included in the Kabbalion. So I believe that the three initiates were probably either Freemasons or certainly had some connection to Freemasonry. But you've heard this term used, Hermetic, Hermetic, Hermetic. And it's funny because I wrote in my book, Use the Force, A Jedi's Guide to the Law of Attraction, about this legendary figure of ancient wisdom named Hermes Trismegistus. Hermes Trismegistus. And in ancient Greek, supposedly that means thrice greatest Hermes. So it's like Hermes, the god of wisdom, he's a great guy, but let's double it. No, hell, let's triple it. Okay? So that means literally we're going to triple the honor of the name. And he is supposedly, well, he was supposedly a real guy. And the work that is attributed to him is called Hermeticism. And these are many writings and philosophies in the esoteric tradition, considered especially to be of great importance during the Renaissance and the Reformation. But here's what the Kabbalion says about Hermes Trismegistus. It says, "In ancient Egypt dwelt the great adepts and masters who have never been surpassed and who seldom have been equaled. During the centuries that have taken their processional flight since the days of the great Hermes, in Egypt was located the great lodge of lodges of the mystics, and at the doors of her temples entered the neophytes, who afterward traveled to the four corners of the earth, carrying with them the precious knowledge which they were ready, anxious, and willing to pass on to those who were ready to receive the same. All students of the occult recognize the debt that they owe to these venerable masters of that ancient land. But among these great masters of ancient Egypt there once dwelt one of whom masters held as the master of masters. This man, if man indeed he was, dwelt in Egypt in the earliest days, and he was known as Hermes Trismegistus. He was the father of the occult wisdom, the founder of astrology, the discoverer of alchemy. The details of his life story are lost to history, owing to the lapse of the years, though several of the ancient countries disputed with each other in their claims to the honor of having furnished his birthplace, and this thousands of years ago. The date of his sojourn to Egypt, in that his last incarnation on this planet, is not known, but it has been fixed at the early days of the oldest dynasties of Egypt, long before the days of Moses. The best authorities regard him as a contemporary of Abraham, and some of the Jewish traditions go so far as to claim that Abraham acquired a portion of his mystic knowledge from Hermes himself. As the years rolled by after his passing from this plane, and some in the tradition say he lived 300 years in the flesh, the Egyptians deified Hermes and made him one of their gods under the name of Thoth. And years after, the people of ancient Greece also made him one of their many gods, calling him Hermes, the god of wisdom. The Egyptians revered his memory for many centuries, yes, tens of centuries, calling him the scribe of the gods, and bestowing upon him his ancient title, Trismegistus, which means the thrice great, the great great, the great of the great, you know, that sort of thing. In all ancient lands, that name was revered, and it's synonymous with the fount of wisdom. So even to this day, we use the term hermetic in the sense of secret, sealed, so that nothing can escape. This is hermetically sealed. And this by reason of the fact that the followers of Hermes always observed the principle of secrecy in their teachings. They did not believe in casting pearls before swine, but rather held to the teaching, milk for babes, meat for strong men, both of which maxims are familiar to readers of the Christian scriptures, but both of which had been used by the Egyptians for centuries before the Christian era. And this policy of careful dissemination of the truth has always characterized the Hermetics. The Hermetic teachings are to be found in all lands, among all religions, but never identified with any particular country nor any particular religious sect. And this is because of a warning of the ancient teachers allowing against this secret doctrine to become crystallized into a creed. So that's one of the reasons behind, and that's an end quote. That was a big passage I just read to you. But I felt it was necessary to give you that background because that's important. I'm going to repeat that. It says, these teachings are found in all lands, but it says you're not supposed to get too ingrained with this because the ancient teachers did not want this to become crystallized into a creed. So in other words, we have seen over and over what happens when humans try to take over some kind of a beautiful philosophy that was created by some individual person we consider a master, and then sort of abuse that, you know, commandeer it and take it over and warp it into something that can be used to create a framework to manipulate others. And they understood that that could easily happen. So what I want to do here is just read over some of the basic elements of the Kybalion, and then I'm going to tell you how you can download a free copy of this as well. Again, it's not that long. It's 58 pages long. It's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. So there are so many ways of approaching this. So let's talk about what's called the seven principles or axioms. So first off, we have the principle of mentalism. The principle of mentalism embodies the idea that all is mind. Everything that happens has to be a result of a mental state which precedes it. For anything to exist, thoughts had to form first, which then form physical reality or manifestation. Your thoughts are seeds, so plant positive seeds in your mind garden. Okay, now I wholeheartedly believe this. And I don't just believe it because of faith. I believe it because of my experiments and because of the scientific wisdom. This goes right back to cymatics and paracymatics, that you create an energy form, and then that is a mold into which the lower vibrational physical matter adhere and shape and collect. And so you can look at this many different ways. One way is to say, you know, look around you right now at all the man-made objects that exist, whether it's a table or a chair or a bed or a cell phone or, you know, whatever device you're using right now to hear me, that first was an image in someone's head. And that image created a mold that that person worked on and may, I'm sure, eventually brought other people into the picture, and they added their bit. But it starts as a vision, and then you somehow are able to shape the physical world to that vision. And in some cases, you literally, you know, scoop it up in your hands like clay, and you mold it together. And in other cases, you just maintain a focus, and you sort of are so energetic and so ambitious and opportunistic that you just start steamrolling ahead until you find a way to make all these things sort of slip into that mold. And that's what a manifestation life is really all about. So I agree very much with that. The next is the principle of correspondence. The principle of correspondence expresses the idea that there is always a correspondence between the laws of phenomena of the various planes of being and life. So this goes back to the idea, as above, so below, as below, so above. And this is the idea, you know, sometimes you see statues that are pointing up or down or whatever, and usually that is to indicate above and below, that what happens on the macro scale happens on the micro scale. It's like you look up with a telescope and you see these galaxies far away that look like spirals, and then you go to the beach on your tiny little planet and you walk around, and what do you find? These seashells that look like spirals. That's what this is all about. And it goes on to say, the principle states that there is a harmony which can be made, agreement and correspondence, between these planes of correspondence. And then these planes are broken down into the great physical plane, the great mental plane, and the great spiritual plane. And that makes sense to me. You'll have to read about those in detail, but you know, you get the essence of it. The physical plane is me kicking the side of my desk right now, and the mental plane is my dog running over here when I snap my fingers, and then the spiritual plane is me reading a manuscript about the Kabbalion. Okay, I think you see the difference between things that kind of sit around, things that have life, and then things like us that are trying to transcend. You know, we're making rockets and we're going out into space and we're trying to expand, and we call that spiritual. Next, we go to the principle of vibration. This expounds the idea that motion is manifest in everything in the universe, that nothing rests and everything moves, vibrates, and circles. This principle explains that the distinction between manifestations of matter, energy, mind, and even spirit are the result of only different vibrations. So the higher a person is on the scale, the higher the rate of vibration. And in this sense, what we call, or what we can call, the all, you can sort of think of that as like God, the all is said to be at an infinite level of vibration, almost to the point of being at rest. Isn't that interesting? It's like infinity. It goes on forever, but since it does that forever, it's almost like it's not doing anything because it's doing the same thing forever. Yeah, it's a paradox. The all is said to be at an infinite level, almost to the point of being at rest. There are said to be millions upon millions of varying degrees between the highest level, the all, and the objects of the lowest vibration. Now, I definitely believe that. That's why you can say that every single thing in the universe is alive to some degree. I even believe that rocks are alive and conscious. I mean, unless something is at absolute zero, when there's no motion whatsoever, I think it probably feels something. And I'm not even sure if that's a good guideline, because I've heard that there are experiments where you can get below absolute zero, and then on the other side, you flip the coin, and now there's some kind of vibration again. So, look, everything that exists is moving, and therefore probably has some feeling, some awareness. And certainly here on this planet, this living, thriving, beautiful planet, it's easy to sit around and look and say, that mountain has a spirit. That beach, that sea has a spirit. That flower has a spirit. And so that's why, you know, we make all these distinctions about what's life and what's death, but those are just from a limited point of view. But when it comes to vibrations, mental transmutation is described as the practical application of this principle. So to change one's mental state is to change vibration. And one may do this by an effort of will, by deliberately fixing the attention upon a more desirable state. Okay, now we're getting into manifestation techniques. And these are things that I have written about quite a bit, especially in my book, Use the Force, and in my new ebook called Finding Your Magic. That is something we'll get back to in a minute. Okay, here, let's go on here to the principle of polarity, which is interesting because we talked about the principle of correspondence. And you might think that it's the same as the principle of polarity, but that's not. Correspondence is saying, well, what's going to happen on this scale is going to happen on that scale. But polarity is another level within both scales. The principle of polarity embodies the idea that everything is dual. Everything has two poles, and everything has its opposite. So all manifested things have two sides, two aspects, or two poles. Everything is and isn't at the same time. All truths are but half truths, and every truth is half false. There are two sides to everything. Opposites are identical in nature, yet different in degree. Extremes meet, and all paradoxes may be reconciled. So that should make sense, because all you are as a conscious being is a point of reference. If we remove you from the picture, then everything just is. There is no such thing as hot or cold or black or white or light or shadow or even good and evil, as a matter of fact. Everything just is. You are the point of reference that brings some meaning to it. And you recognize when you insert yourself that there are, from your point of view, two different ends to everything you can observe and witness. Next, we have the principle of rhythm. The principle of rhythm expresses the idea that in everything there is manifested a measured motion, a to and from, a flow and inflow, a swing backward and forward, a pendulum-like movement. There is a rhythm between every pair of opposites or poles and is closely related to the principle of polarity. It can be seen that this principle enables transition from one pole to the other and not necessarily poles of extreme opposites. So you ought to get that picture that everything is undulating and moving. It's just like the waves in the ocean. Okay, you're standing on the beach and the waves come up on the beach and then they go back out. And then they come back up and they go back out. And everything we observe in the entire universe is a cycle of undulation and rhythm. Next, we have the principle of cause and effect. It explains that there is a cause for every effect and an effect for every cause. It states there is no such thing as chance, that chance is merely a term indicating extant causes not recognized or perceived. I could not agree more with that. You know, for every action, there is an opposite but equal reaction, right? And it doesn't make sense for there to be an effect without a cause, and vice versa. Exactly what this manuscript is telling us. And so, therefore, everything is part of a huge chain, part of a giant interconnection. And therefore, you have to think very carefully about what you say and do, because you're going to create one hell of an effect, and it might not be something that happens immediately. It could take, it could happen immediately, but it could take a month, could take a year, could take 10 years, but eventually, it kicks in. It kicks in. Cause and effect. Yeah, that's a big one. And everything we know about science and spirituality confirms that for us. There is no such thing as random chance. That's a human invention, just like the calendar is, where we try to force this artificial framework upon Mother Nature. Next, we have the principle of gender. The principle of gender embodies the idea that gender is manifested in everything. The authors state that this does not relate explicitly to the commonly understood notion of sex, but rather to generate, to create, or to produce in general. So if we look at gender on all planes, according to feminine and masculine principles, mental gender is described as a hermetic concept which relates to the feminine and masculine principles. And this does not refer to someone's physical sex, nor does it suggest that someone of a certain sex necessarily has a matching mental gender. The concept put forth in the Kybalion states that gender exists on all planes of existence, physical, mental, and spiritual, and represents different aspects on different planes. So everything and everyone contains these two elements or principles. The feminine principle is always in the direction of receiving impressions and has a much more varied field of operation than the masculine. The feminine conducts the work of generating new thoughts, concepts, and ideas, the imagination. The masculine principle is always in the direction of giving out or expressing, and contains itself with the will and its varied phrases. And it's said that there must be a balance in these two forces. Without the feminine, the masculine is apt to act without restraint, order, or reason, resulting in chaos. The feminine alone, on the other hand, is apt to constantly reflect and fail to do anything, resulting in stagnation. So with both the masculine and feminine working in conjunction, there is thoughtful action that breeds success, which points out that both the feminine and the masculine fulfill each other. Now, I've just gone over some of the concepts here, and I agree with all that I have said here. And to me, this makes a lot of sense. Again, the wording suggests to me that there definitely is a Freemasonic element to this, but it's more than that. It goes back to all the old esoteric mystery schools and the things that have been, secret, because for one thing, you get your throat cut, or hanged or whatever. I mean, all throughout history, there have been many, many eras in which you could be executed for talking about anything weird, anything that wasn't like right on target with exactly what the local religious sect wanted you to discuss. It's easy to take for granted, like, oh, we have this freedom, especially if you're an American here living in the year 2018. You think, oh, I have all this freedom. I can talk about what I want and read what I want and write what I want. But most of human history has not been that way. So these are things that they really do sort of clarify, don't they? This thing that you've probably already sensed and already know about. But it also breaks it down on a pretty simple scale. And, when it comes to the Kybalion, I want you to be able to read this and enjoy it on your own. And I want to also give you a little bit of extra information. I'm trying to find all my pages here. Because I've got a lot of notes sort of strewn all over the place. So there are a couple of quotes from the Kybalion that I find especially interesting. Here's one, and I'm going to read this verbatim. "The possession of knowledge, unless accompanied by a manifestation and expression and action, is like the hoarding of precious metals, a vain and foolish thing. Knowledge, like wealth, is intended for use. The law of use is universal, and he who violates it suffers by reason of his conflict with natural forces." Now, let me break that down a little bit for you. I am a guy, as you know, who is, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm self-employed, I control my own destiny as much as anybody does. And so I'm always out there researching stuff, and sometimes I come across something that's really cool and amazing, and the first thought that you have is like, this is so great, I need to save this up until I have a big opportunity to really get it out there. So you might think like, well, why would I go on this local TV show and announce this amazing thing that I have when I can save it up and do it on a big national network someday? But what I found years ago is that it doesn't work that way. And that's really foolish of you. That basically, it's like, when people contact me from time to time and they say, I have a fantastic idea for a project, I say, okay. And they go, but I don't want to tell you about it because I want to make sure you don't steal it. I go, okay. And so then they're like, well, how can I tell you about this and make sure you don't steal it? I go, I don't know. And they say, well, how about I write up a paper saying that you are not going to steal what I'm about to tell you? And I say, well, what if I happen to already be thinking about something like you're going to tell me? Then you're going to think that I stole it from you. But because I don't know what you're about to tell me, I hate to sign something that might happen to coincide with something I'm already doing. I mean, so it's one of those things where you just like, look, here it is. You find something amazing, you get out there and you share it. You don't have to hold back. And, you know, this book, The Kybalion, that's based upon supposedly this ancient wisdom, I believe it is, it's been around now for 110 years in this particular form. It came to me freely, and so I'm going to give it to you freely. There's no money being made in this entire process. In a minute, I'm going to tell you how you can read this. And here's another quote, and I think this is very, very important. Mind, as well as metals and elements, may be transmuted from state to state, degree to degree, condition to condition, pole to pole, vibration to vibration. That's an actual quote from the Kybalion, and this shows you, again, we are talking about the idea that the true key to success, the philosopher's stone, the goal of alchemy, to take something which might be considered worthless and turn it into something that's priceless, it's not about lead and gold, it's about taking your thoughts and manifesting them and taking what's on one frequency and being able to turn it into another frequency. I could go on and on, obviously, but I think that's about all I need to tell you. You know, basically, I agree with these tenets. I'm not going to tell you I agree with every single word in the Kybalion because, you know, who knows, I may have misread something or whatever. But the best bet is to give you the opportunity to read it yourself. So here's how you get your free download of this PDF called the Kybalion. You go to freecharm.com, freecharm.com. Now, you've probably been to freecharm.com before, because I tell people if you go there, you'll get a free good luck charm from me. And you can also, you know, sign up for my free e-newsletter, and these are all things that I presume you've already done if you listen to this podcast, because why wouldn't you? At first, you're going to scroll down, and you're going to see some things that look familiar. It's all good stuff. But about halfway down, you'll see where it says The Kybalion, and you'll find this podcast available there. And then right below it, it'll say something like, you know, to download the Kybalion, click here. And it's just a PDF. Again, it's only 58 pages. And if the wording within the Kybalion is accurate, then you are going to read the Kybalion, because it is now time for you to read the Kybalion. It is appropriate. It has come into your life now for a reason. And if it just makes you think about one thing that you've never thought about before, it's worth it. I mean, that's how I live my life. I think to myself, I'll sit around and listen to 2 or 3 or 4 hours of some speaker. I'll sit down and I'll read a whole book, whatever, just to get one new thing, one new thought, one new little spin that hasn't occurred to me. And so read this and see if there's one thing at least that makes you think a little bit more about life, or maybe even just confirms something that you already felt or sensed, but maybe put it in more clear terms for you. So go to freecharm.com, freecharm.com. Scroll down about, like I say, midway. And if you've never been to freecharm.com, enjoy all the goodies there for you, because there's some great stuff that will help you. It's all free stuff straight from me. And then scroll down about halfway, and you'll see the section on the Kybalion where you can download this. So I hope that you find this as interesting as I do. I hope that you will sense that it truly has come into your life at this time for a particular reason, and I certainly look forward to hearing more from you about your experience. Well, this podcast is called Joshua P. Warren Daily. It's always short. It's always free. I try to leave one for you every day. Sometimes I can't because I'm out in the field and I don't have a connection or whatever, but I hope that you will continue taking the knowledge that you get from here, sharing it with others, and I hope that you'll subscribe to the podcast. All you have to do is go to joshuappwarren.com and click the link to the podcast. You can subscribe through various means, or just follow me on Twitter at Joshua P. Warren, at Joshua P. Warren, and I will tweet when a new one is available. So, more cool, free things are on the way. I assure you of that. That's part of my life's purpose. And so I'm happy to pass what I learn along to you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. Thank you for staying curious. And I will talk to you again soon.